from batsby.blogspot.co.uk. What time is it? Since my first Ticker Ticker Timex, of which I have written before, I've always worn a wristwatch. I can't recall a time when I didn't, and for men of my generation, the type of watch you wore said much about you, which is why I now go for an affordable Seiko in a classic plain style. Dull, unpretentious, reliable. After all, it has a job to do. Not for me the trendy gigantic face nor the chronometer with too many buttons, none of which serve any useful purpose. Breitling, Rolex, Cartier et al. Will never adorn my wrist unless I simultaneously win the lottery and lose my marbles. Like my choice of car, your choice of watch often says less flattering things about you than you'd like, and for the cost of a Navi timer, it could buy a half-decent set of nondescript wheels. But I noticed the younger generations eschew the arm-born timepiece mostly in favour of never knowing what time it is. In the age of everything you want, whenever you want, no doubt they believe the EU made this happen, the ticking away of the hours is irrelevant. They will never know the shared joy of the following day post-mortem of the last night's scheduled television. Where is the community in Stream When You Like? Only punctuality appears to become a bygone courtesy. I'm not very late is a poor substitute for actually keeping to the time-critical appointments. And having a clock on your smartphone, no matter how much you plead otherwise, is just not the same. Given that the average under 30 is glued to that tiny screen 24/7, you would imagine that they would be more than unusually aware of the time of day. Yet, they rarely display evidence that they're even aware of which day of the week it is. If manners maketh the man, then mathy tissot maketh man on time. All of which ranting was prompted by the sight of a watchless George Osborne and Andrew Neil the other night. No, young Gideon, it is known, was a lotus eater in his heyday, and heeded the hedonistic call of the wild. Not for him a deference to convention, rather the regular and massive indulgence of time-altering substances. If he'd won a watch, he would have been of little use. It's hard to tell the time when you're seeing double, at twice the speed of thought. From time to time, stories emerge which show him in a less than admirable light, and one such anecdote was recently related in the tabloid press. The young Chancellor-in-waiting had acquired spacious new rooms in Magdalen College. As the son of a baronet, it was suspected that a certain number of strings had been pulled. He held a party soon after moving in, and everybody admired the up-and-coming history student's expensive tastes in decor. Pissed as farts, they partied into the night until George suddenly decided it was time for bed and invited the stragglers to join him in the boudoir. The room was dominated by an enormous double king-size bed with an enormous brass gong above the headboard. "What's the big brass gong for?" one of the guests asks.
"That's no gong," slurred George. "That's a talking clock."
The guests looked at each other. By now, everybody was exceptionally squiffy. "A talking clock? Seriously?" asked the Inquisitor incredulously.
"Sure," said Osborne. "I'll show you."
He picked up the beater and struck the gong hard. The sound waves pounded the air in the room and everybody flinched. Then, as the reverberations were dying away, they heard from the next room,
"You bitter tots, 3:30 in the morning.